Mark's guest today. She's choosing the music for between now and 3 o'clock. And she is Samoan New Zealand writer, actor and director Louise Tu'u. Louise was the first New Zealand and Pacific Island playwright to take part in the Royal Court Theatre International Residency in London. She was named one of the New Zealand Herald's trailblazers too, and she's just released what she's calling a textbook called We Fit the Criteria, plays by Louise Tu'u, and she joins us now. Malo lava, Louise.
Oh, malo fo'i, Jesse. Wa mai oi.
How is your bubble going?
We're pretty good. I mean, my partner and I are both freelancers, so we're used to instability, unfortunately. we've got a child, so that always makes it exciting. Keeping ourselves entertained.
How old is the child? Old enough to know what's going on?
Four and a half. Uh-huh. Kind of limited. I don't know what pandemic is in Samoan. I should probably look it up, but
Like she took my 4.5-year-old for a bike ride today in the Auckland sunshine. It was just lovely, the two of us, cruising around those mostly empty streets. I've enjoyed having a bit of a chance to catch up with them, but can't last forever, obviously. You mentioned Samoan. How many different languages do you speak, by the way?
I think four. So, Samoan, English, Italian, and German.
It's very impressive.
Oh, cheers. It's good to know when people are backstabbing you. Very handy.
Yes, true. So tell me, under what circumstances did you learn Italian and German?
Italian I did probably really starting from when I did Latin at high school. And so that kind of, sets up the basis really of understanding English better. And then I managed to convince my parents that going to Italy for a year abroad as an exchange student was a fantastic idea to cement that knowledge of, largely a non-spoken language, but still, really just, it was just I'm really really lucky because I've got parents who are liberal in regards to a Samoan upbringing and just could see the vision of going overseas and learning more about other people.
Whereabouts in Italy did you go?
I was meant to go to Lecce, which is the heel of the boot, but at the last minute that family said no, so I got moved up north. So I went to Milan. I was in a little place called Casina di Pecchi, which is still in Milan, and just out of it, it's on the train line, so... and that translates to apiary. So, little fact. But, really cool. Really, really amazing.
It would have, I imagine, been as exciting for them as it was for you, having a Samoan New Zealander turn up?
Yes. Oh, well, I don't know. I mean, when I was introduced to my sister at school, they said, oh, here's a person from New Zealand. So I had people come up to me and go, oh, we saw once the Warriors. Is that your life? And I was like, not really. I mean, I'm from Auckland. But, it was quite interesting to see what their level of knowledge was. And also, it was a linguistic and a scientific school that I went to. So, English was one of those subjects that was just foundational. And they were, really, really, really cool to go to such a specific school.
And it was also where you discovered acting. Do I have that right?
Yes. That's correct.
And did you immediately know that that was the thing for you?
I think it was that thing where I had really good mates who looked out for me, and one of them was directing, and she gave me the part of a person who could make people laugh just by speaking. So... I think hearing those first set of laughs made me go, oh, this is quite cool. And, laughing with me and laughing at me at the same time. So,
By the way, we started this interview by playing Breezin' by George Benson. Why did you choose that track?
I went to live in Samoa in 1999. I did a degree in Italian and German, which is why I studied those. And I thought, actually, I'm Samoan, so I should really go and meet my family. So I went there and lived there. And I heard that song playing. I heard it before, but somehow it took on a special significance by being there. And it's actually my alarm. It's my morning alarm is breathing. So when I hear the flutes, I go, oh, it's time to get up. I'm going to wake up now.
Yeah, I had the same experience not living over there, but I was in Fiji the first time I heard the song Albatross by Fleetwood Mac, which is, again, this really kind of beachy, summery, cruisy thing. And whenever I hear that song, I think of the exact place I was when I heard it for the first time on the radio over there. We asked you about films, and you actually nominated Once Were Warriors. Oh, no, it's The Warriors, sorry. Yes. The Warriors?
Yeah.
Yes. What's this all about?
The Warriors, which came out in 1979, is this cult classic film that we... It was one of the first films I saw in VHS in the 80s, and it's a gang movie, so, you know, not really something you should be showing your 6 or 7-year-old, but, you know, yeah. VHS is pretty cool. And so it's about a story of a gang who attend a rumble in the Bronx, and... The guy who's the leader of the gang that is proposing a truce amongst the gangs gets shot, and then this gang called the Warriors gets blamed for it, and they have to make it back. They have to make it from the Bronx to Brooklyn, to Coney Island, where they're from, which is about 48 kilometres. And every other gang is, unbeknownst to them, the word is... you know, to try and kill the Warriors, and they have to make it back without using the subway. It's a really, really cool film. I used to watch it all the time. If you watch it now as an adult, for the first time, you'll probably think, my goodness, that's terrible. But it's a really, really fun movie. I won't show my own child until they're about 18 or something.
Yeah, it's got a bit of cult status, and it also, as I look at the movie poster for it, it is just... the sort of movie you would see when you went down to the video store with your parents and had to choose something, right? Just something about it looks like
That's
one of those
right.
VHS cassette covers.
That's right. Grown men with makeup. Yeah.
I'm talking to Louise Tu'u, who is a guest on Bookmarks today. She's telling us about a few of her favourite things. What inspired you to write plays? Obviously... you did a bit of acting, and then what sort of made you want to start scripting yourself?
Well, actually because I saw a really terrible play, and I was very, very incensed by watching this play, and I wanted my money back. I know it's not a great entrance into the industry, but out of spite, really. I thought, well, I should channel that emotion and in that kind of foolish way that you go, oh, I'm sure I can write something better than that. So I wrote a funding application, Jesse. That's what I wrote. To go, give me some money to make this work and I was really, really fortunate. Auckland City Council and Waitakere City Council gave me some money to write a play. It was targeting Pacific Island teenagers. And that's the first play of my book. Te
Tauwanga,
the competition.
And that would be so interesting for that target audience, right? Because it was a bit of a satire of Polyfest, which looms pretty huge if you're a Pacifica teenager in Auckland in particular.
Yes, it's huge. Yes, it's I didn't understand how huge it was until I went to Auckland Girls Grammar School. So that was my high school for 5 years, and I think I'd heard of them, but they were on the periphery for me. And I happened to start the year that we lost. We lost the Samoan competitive group title, and it was really funereal. It was really, really quite gloomy. And I was like, what's happening? Yeah, so we won it the next 3 years.
So it was like, you know, the Bring It On or The Pitch Perfect of Polyfest,
yes.
Your play, La Tauwanga.
Yeah. Yes, and I was in my casting, I was lucky to cast one old mate who I used to play Jazzwith, who was actually one of the leaders in 1 year, and she would correct me when I was trying to do something and with the actors, and she'd go, no, we used to do it like this. Or you could do it like this, but then people would know that you didn't know what you're talking about. So that was really, really wonderful to have that on yeah. board, that expertise.
How long were you, or how far were you out of high school when you wrote that play?
Oh, pretty old. I think I would have been about 25.
Uh-huh.
So, yeah, pretty old, but still, I think if you still live in Auckland, and you, which I did, you know, at that time, and I was still like, oh, why is this? It's really interesting looking at people's first plays because they tend to be partially autobiographical.
Yeah.
And so this one is with my identity struggle, but channeled through a young Samoan male who can't really speak Samoan well, but is successful in the Pākehā world.
Where did it play? Where was it put on?
I propose that we put it on at community centres in Auckland. So we opened it at the Metro Theatre in Mangere East. And one of our actors was really smart to film that performance. So that's the only version I've got. And then we went to Teatre Tū Peninsula and then to Kōwhā Intermediate in Mount Albert. So, and we managed to get really good crowds with Kōwhā.
Yeah. Could you feel it connecting?
Yeah, especially with the final scene. So the final scene of the play is the protagonist gets a hiding from his dad, and it was fairly violent. And I had a conversation with a dramaturge who said, I don't think you should put it on because, you know, it's quite violent. And I said, but, you know, people are going to laugh. And she said, what, people are going to laugh? I said, yeah, because that's a coping mechanism once you've had a hiding. You've got to laugh about it, otherwise... You know, just, and we had different reactions. So out south, an opening, people were just like falling over themselves, and it was mostly in Samoan. So it's all the kind of Samoan abuse that you get thrown at you when you get a hiding. So come and say you love me after someone's beaten you. And you know, it is, you know, talking about it during the daytime and to you, it is very violent, but it's also authentic. And I wanted it to be real, and relatable. Yeah.
Why have you released the play, and another one hopefully we'll talk about as well, why have you released them in book form and why now?
I had been working on this slowly for 2 years, and I could see a gap in the curriculum. So on the prescribed playwrights list on NZQA, there are about 24, 25 plays that are suggested for students of Level 3 drama to look at and study. And there is not a single play there by a Pacifica female playwright. And that really made me go, oh, okay, gap in the market. Maybe I can offer. So I see this book as a contribution to the canon of dramatic literature.
Yeah, and that's amazing. I've only just got my head around that. But, of course, that makes total sense. And, you know, one thing to be able to go and see yourself reflected in a play that comes to your school, and then another one to actually be able to study it rather than studying, you know, something that means nothing to you.
Yes, I think, and even if you hate the plays that are, you know, presented to you, at least you can develop some criticality and the language to go, you know, in a way to do what I did. I saw a play that really infuriated me, so I went, I'm going to do something else. Is not going online and bashing that person. It's going, oh, actually, I will take that on board and use that energy to make something that I want to see. And so that was, I've consulted with senior drama and dance teachers, Ryan Timoko Benjamin and Chloe Davison, who've been incredible in providing NCA resources that act as responses to my work. So they're not, like strictly like NCEA, you know, this is the standard, the assessment standard, but they are ways to get into the works so that they're legitimate. And the forewords are amazing as well by Mele Wentz and Leilani Visisio Iinapua and the design.
So has this COVID situation got in the way of the launch of the book?
Yes, it has, in that I have the book on pre-sale, and the book is finished, but it hasn't been published. Mm-hmm. So I've been considering, should I release an e-version, but I really like the idea of a physical, tangible book that you can scribble on, you can bookmark or what have you. You can dog ear. I'm not suggesting this for the library copies, of course, but for your own personal use, that you can really have ownership of it and just scribble things. Yeah.
So how do we support you? How do we get the book?
You go to my website, which is We Should Practice with a C. That's practicec.com. That's the name I work under. And I think it's like the second, third to last post. You're greeted with the cover design, which is amazing, by Layla Tweedy Cullen, otherwise known as Narrow Gauge. And then you scroll down and you'll see the link. It's a Shopify link. So
great.
Legit.
Meanwhile, let's get back to some of your picks. We're going to play some Spandau Ballet. How come?
Oh, yay. Oh, that's my funeral song. Yeah.
Louise.
Yeah, I know. Macabre. But I think, in some ways you should get, organised. I heard the song first when I was five, so 1983. And it's just always stuck with me. I always loved it. Never seen the music video. I think there's a part of me that doesn't want to see what that was, because I did live through the 80s. And when I say funeral song, I refer to my wonderful father died last year. And so a lot of these things of collecting and packaging and finishing have been really big themes in the last year. So, I just love the song. It's got amazing
here it comes.
Design.
True, just for you.
So true, funny how it seems, always in time, but never in line for dreams. Head over heels, went toe to toe, this is the sound. Yeah.
back again.
RNZ National. I enjoyed that way too much. True by Spandau Ballet, chosen by our Bookmarks guest, Louise Tu'u. We do Bookmarks each Wednesday, and we get a notable New Zealander in to tell us about a few of their favourite things. And Louise, who is a playwright herself, has chosen loads of plays to talk about today, which is cool. We'll start with After the End by Dennis Kelly. Can you tell us where you saw this one and why it had an impression?
Yeah, I saw that in 2005 at the Bush Theatre in London as part of the Royal Court Theatre Residency, and it's a chilling two-hander. Dennis Kelly is such a great writer, and I won't spoil it. I really think people should find a copy and read it and stage it. Yeah.
So it's a two-hander, is a play with two people in it. And,
two people.
Yeah, and without spoiling it, can you tell us anything about it?
The situation is not as you think it is.
Okay.
Probably.
So it sort of unfolds in front of you, hey?
Yes, and they only play the two characters, so it's not a two-hander, which, you know, where they jump from different characters, they are playing themselves.
Has it ever been put on in New Zealand, to your knowledge?
I don't think so.
Okay.
And it would be, you know, fitting that New Zealand DIY kind of theatre aesthetic. It's two people. So it's not a hell of a lot of set from memory. And, big shout-out moment for that play.
You mentioned the residency. What was that exactly that you won or that you were awarded?
So I applied. I'd actually applied the year before and didn't get in. And what it enabled you to do was to be in the City of London and meeting with amazing playwrights. So I was really lucky to meet Sir Harold Pinter and Sir Tom Stoppard. And it was really cool. And being I think being quite cash as a Samoan New Zealander, I went, oh, hey, can I get a photo with you? So I got a photo with both of them, which was a bit cheeky. But and Alan Rickman, I think he took us for a session, and there were 16 playwrights from all around the world, pretty much at an emerging status, and we were exposed to theatre that was happening at the time. And it was about July, August. So, you know, the kind of serious theatre had really wound down for the year, which is why After the End, I think, really stood out, because it was, you know, absolutely not hilarious at all. And it really, I think, it acted as a springboard, because I was exposed to international theatre, not just in English-speaking. We went to a play that was completely in Farsi, so we were really reliant on surtitles, which is similar to going to opera, and you're like, yeah, really out of it. Really great place to be, out of your comfort zone. I'd gotten there. That particular residency happened maybe about a week after the London July bombings. So it was really quite a heightened environment to be in an arts, in that arts milieu. So, yeah.
How long were you there for?
A month, only a month. And you know, they pack a lot in a month. I don't know how many plays we went to, how many workshops we did, discussions. And I keep in contact with quite a few of them. So that's really, incredible. Oh, and in the last week, they stage a play that you've submitted. They stage 15 minutes of it, and it's been workshopped with professional actors and a director. So, yeah.
One of your plays?
Yes. So every single playwright had the last 3 days. Yeah, and I took a play called Imakulata, which was set in Samoa and in New Zealand, and I had Caribbean actors trying to speak Samoan, which was really fascinating. But they were amazing. You know, they come from an island background as well, the heritage. So we shared a lot of coconut climbing stories. probably the most memorable thing. Yeah.
Another play you loved is called Black Tie by Rimini Protocol. Can you tell us about this one?
So that Rimini Protocol, there's three theatre practitioners who are German and Swiss German, and they this particular play was the first play I saw at a really monumental theatre for me called Hebel am Ufer, or Hau, H-A-U, in Berlin. And the play is basically this one Korean woman who talks about her journey of being adopted into a German family, and the only lineage that she has is like, we found you in a box somewhere in Seoul. And so she does genome testing to try and work out. She sends her results to two different companies. And what I really loved about that play is they really expand the notion of what theatre could be. So they're using these experts who work for genome science and genetic engineering. And the protagonist herself is an author and just struggling. She was just talking about her journey to get back to what is being Korean, if I'm from here. And they're playing with that premise of scripting a life, which is really quite mind-boggling. And I've still got the paper ticket for it. That's how amazing it is for me to kind of think about that show and go, oh, how can you expand how you're represented or what you want to say?
The other play in your book, which you've just released or are releasing, is called Horses and Other Farm Animals. Can you give us a quick sort of nutshell about what that play of yours is about?
Yeah, sure. So that play in its production had five women who, I think the loose storyline were two Tongan cousins. One got funded for a dance piece and the other one didn't, and they happened to be on this tropical island and they come across this lion and random Samoan taxi driver uncle. It was just really, I think the way that I generally summarize it, especially in order to sell it, is to say it presents a diversity of Pasifika women and stories. So it's just, it's not kind of classically recognizable archetypes. They're just these women. And we premiered it at Whammy Bar, which is off K Road, Karangahape Road in Auckland, and yeah, it was really cool. I really enjoyed it. I felt like there's like a 9-year difference between those two plays, and when I talk about my practice, I talk about it evolving and devolving at the same time. So the kind of start Le Talvanga is easily the most conventional play that I've ever written, and then it just kind of becomes more expansive and more loose, more meditative. Yeah.
Are you writing at the moment?
I'm just trying to get this book out. And I am actually writing, I'm working on a couple of screenplays and another book idea. So it's been really productive, this pandemic. I kind of feel like I should be ashamed about saying that, but I'm not.
No, there's a lot of that going around, actually. People are grateful to have work, and people are guilty to be enjoying certain aspects of it, but I think it's really human. Shall we go out with a couple of minutes of Manu Ole Vaveau?
Yes, yeah. Yes, please.
And what was the connection for you between the song and your late father?
It's the song that he always tried to teach myself and my three siblings as much as he could about being Samoan. And my parents, I'm really grateful to them. It's just that, you know, my mum, who's still alive, who's amazing, Masi Tangatu, they just always spoke to us in Samoan, so we always had that in our ears. And the song is the one that he taught me so I could teach it to our child so that they would not forget Samoan. And,
great. Yeah. Here it comes. Thanks so much for your time today. Really appreciate it, Louise. Saunu ole upu ole awile ina ila awe awe se ifai mai sau upu betua ini mala betua imanu sau funala upele sau masina ipu vai malu.
se inu aneai tamaolenu. Awe, awe, se ipai mai saupu, betua ini mala, betua imanu. Safuna la upele, sama sinai puvai malu. Se inu aneai, tama olenu. Se inu aneai, tama olenu. Se inu aneai, tama olenu. Se inu aneai, tama olenu.